Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Empowering Family Caregiver Show on Blog Talk Radio. This is Susan Baida, your host and co-founder of eCareDiary.com, website for caregivers of aging parents. I am so glad that the focus of our show is on a subject called Journeying from Heartbreak to Hope and Guidelines for Caregivers. We are very pleased to introduce our distinguished guest, Dietrich Stroh, who is the author of a book called 3 Months, A Caregiving Journey from Heartbreak to Hope, which is all about advocating for a loved one and being part of a medical team and handling grief while involved in caring for someone with a terminal illness. I can't imagine anything worse. He is an engineer by trade and founded Stuber Stroh Associates, which is a civil engineering firm that grew into CSW Stuber Stroh Engineering Group in California. He is active in the community and has sat on many statewide national boards. Dietrich, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
And it's really a pleasure to have you and to have someone who comes to us from such a different you know, your background is in civil engineering, and you have an engineering firm, and yet you've written this book about your 3 month caregiving journey. So, why don't we just get right into it? Why did you write the book 3 months?
I've often asked that question. It started out very simply. After Margaret had passed away, I spent so many of my evenings just thinking about her and writing down notes about my experience going through the 3 months time that she was from the time she was diagnosed to the time she died. And as I processed through that, I started thinking, you know, maybe we're going to put this into a book form and give people that are either going through it or possibly going through it or just want to understand better what it's like, put into a book form. And that's how it got started.
Yes. Well, did you tell us what your wife was diagnosed with, and what did it feel like when you were told that she was diagnosed with this?
Yeah, she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, actually stage 4, which generally speaking is terminal, and only about 5% recover from it one way or another. But it was actually what happened was we were coming back from Thanksgiving at her mother's house, and she said, "I feel full," and I kept kidding her. I said, "We ate too much." Well, it turned out that fluid was developing in her abdominal area, and we didn't know that at the time. So she went to the doctor, and one test led to another, and they finally did a CAT scan on December 22nd, and there was the tumors, a large tumor on her pancreas, and already spitting off cancer cells into the rest of her abdominal cavity and on her liver and all over. And then when we first told that she had this tumor, we immediately knew that this was going to be a huge problem, and we didn't know any more about it at that point in time, but we just kind of fell into each other's arms and started crying.
Oh my goodness! Oh, I can't even imagine what that must be like. And she was quite normal and healthy up until point.
Oh gosh, yes. She was really one of those persons that ate all the right foods. In fact, sometimes I didn't know what we were eating, but she said, "Just eat; it's good for you." stuff like that. She may have had a glass of wine. She never smoked. She exercised and really took care of herself. And that's what so surprised everybody, that they all thought I'd die first because I have a heart issue. Not a heart issue. I had a valve replaced 11 years ago. Anyway, she was a very healthy person. And for this to happen, it was kind of a surprise.
My goodness. I mean, what a devastating disease this is. I mean, it's just really cruel. And were there any warning signs at all?
Not at all, actually, no. To answer your question, there was no pain. There was no She was just led a normal life until she started filling up with fluid. And the reason she was filling up with fluid is that it's the way the body reacts to cancer, and it protects itself. It's trying to protect the rest of the organs, which doesn't do very well in this case. But
yeah.
So that's the fluid, and that all that has to be drained off every so often. That's what she went through.
Wow.
No symptoms.
Dietrich, you know, I really thank you for writing from your experience and sharing this with us all, because, you know, it's not very often that we hear from the men's perspective on, you know, going through the, first of all, the devastating news about your wife's diagnosis, but then secondly, being her caregiver during those last months. And I really want to thank you for that. As we're in the middle of discussing your book, is there a website that you'd like to share about where people could get more information about your book and where they can learn more about, I think, your experiences?
Yeah, I'm trying to actually pick it up right now.
Yes, I have it here. I think it's 3monthsbook.com.
There you go. That's it.
Okay, so you have to spell it out. It's 3monthsbook.com, threemonthsbook.com. Pretty easy to remember.
Right.
So, Dietrich, so what was the family's reaction? I mean, I just can't even imagine how my own family would react with news like this. I mean, what did you all do?
Well, obviously, the following day, I immediately start calling the whole family and her family and my family. And anyway, it was ranged all the emotions you could think of, all the way from shock to literally denial. No, that can't be. To just quiet, just to say, didn't say anything. And so it's everybody knew that there was going to be a problem, but there's also this issue that comes through all the time, and it did with me too, and that's hope, the simple word of hope. And there's always, well, will she be able to survive it? Will she go chemo? Will that give her? And at the first, when we were told about this, they gave her, with chemo, they gave her maybe 9 months to a year. Well, it didn't last that long for a lot of different reasons. But but the family, as I say, a whole different reactions. And you get this from friends, too. It's some people will talk like magpies with her, and others will just shut up and look at her.
Right, they don't know how to react and what to say, I bet.
That's right.
And they probably just felt very uncomfortable being around her, some of your friends.
Well, that's another emotion you get. They feel very uncomfortable and afraid to talk to her about the disease. At least my family talked to her about it. My and her family did, so it was, as far as the family's good, but her friends, it was rather interesting reactions.
Sure. It's like, what do you say to someone, you know?
Right.
Well, tell us why you called this book 3 months, because I didn't get that immediately, you know, so
well,
when I first, you know.
It is kind of a strange title, but it was actually, she diagnosed, and 3 months later she died, so that's the 3 months.
Wow. Okay, that's so it was really, you literally only had 3 months with her.
That's right.
From the time she was diagnosed to the time she passed on.
That's
and
right.
Wow.
Right.
Okay. My goodness. Wow. That, what a short period of time. I can't even imagine what you do. I mean, I would imagine it's like a lifetime of things you want to put into that time frame, right?
Well, that's the other interesting thing. It got down to a point that just to make her comfortable, just to keep her comfortable, keep her happy, keep her in some fashion with quality of life, if you will,
sure,
put it that way. And one of the interesting things, we never talked about death. We never talked about it. Now, she wrote a little bit of a diary when she was first diagnosed, and which after a while she couldn't write anymore, and she that's in the book, too, her diary, and she talks about the cancer and what have you, but she doesn't use the word death in it. And all she ever did say was, well, I was wondering how this was all going to end. So it's a short time, and I tell you one thing, you learn one heck of a lot of stuff about not only the disease, but how to take care of people, how to keep them comfortable, make them happy, so to speak.
Right.
See them smile once in a while, and you go through that. You learn what you do.
My question here now is, I mean, did she know that she had that short of a period of time, or she thought she had longer? Did you both think that she had much longer than what she actually had?
Well, as I say, we were first told maybe she had 9 months to a year with chemo. And then what happened was she started the chemo, and she, what happened, part of the fact that she could not eliminate, she couldn't go to the bathroom. And
right.
So they went through checking that all out, and it turned out that she had a blockage. So then
yeah.
She had to go through a surgery to have a bypass, and that was also part of it. And then right after that happened, coming out of the hospital, she got a staph infection and got thrown back in the hospital. So all of that really accelerated the whole thing, and she never had any more chemo. And that's how the whole thing got shortened to 3 months.
My goodness. And I imagined, I have so many questions on this whole. I mean, my goodness, how do you even? fortunately, I have some questions that I want to kind of follow the pattern of, but forgive me for wanting to get distracted and ask you so many different questions, because
no
it's
problem.
Just such a an incredible life experience. I mean, of course for her and of course for you. Tell us what it was like writing this book. I guess from an emotional standpoint, what was it like for you to write this?
Well, as I say, I started with notes at night, and of course a lot of crying went into it in the process, and it was really part of the grieving process. It really helped me to get through and come out the other end of it, so to speak. In fact, one morning I woke up a number of months later, and I said, geez, I feel different. Why do I feel different? I don't feel this emptiness. I don't feel lacking something. And realized that maybe I'm on the other end of that grieving issue. And people grieve differently. Everybody does do it differently. But it was interesting because when I started doing these notes and just putting that all down, I mean, I wrote about everything. I wrote about the cat sitting on her bed and she talking to the cats, just mm-hmm. the whole section on that. So it helped me to understand what had happened and get through it.
I imagine it did, and it was pretty, I bet it really helped you through the grieving process, didn't it?
Oh, gosh, yes. You know, and you do a lot of crying, no question about that. And
sure. I mean, well, if you're confronting what you're feeling by writing, I imagine that would certainly,
It's what one of the more simple things you miss, and I know it's going to sound maybe silly to some people, but it's that person laying next to you in bed.
Sure.
Not there.
Sure.
That's the biggest loss, so to speak, for me, and just not having her around, not hearing her talk, not hearing her laugh.
Sure.
So, you know,
and
I'm not the only one that's ever been through this type of stuff, but...
Did you have help during the last 3 months of her life? I mean, were you on your own, or did other family come in, or, I mean...
Well, the family was very, very, obviously very supportive. Her daughter, my stepdaughter, came out from Vermont to California and stayed with me for a couple of months, and was very, very helpful. In fact, we work as a team with her. And then we had some of my family, my daughters, who are local, come over mm-hmm. and help out. We also had hospice. We had, we hired a caregiver when Donna, my stepdaughter, could, and I needed a break. So as we'd go to a movie or something, so the caregiver would come in and take care or be with her. But Donna was unbelievable help. And plus the fact at night we were able to, when Margaret was sleeping, we were able to sit there and just talk about stuff. And she's a history major and I'm a history buff, so we had the fun of doing that.
I bet you were able to kind of rekindle a relationship probably that wouldn't have otherwise taken on, you know, it probably took on a different life of its own, right?
Yes, in fact, that's actually it's really kind of amazing when we see each other now. I mean, the closeness, just unbelievable closeness. And, you know, she was there. She fought the battle along with me, so.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm sure you both really bonded.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, how fortunate for you. And what I wanted to say actually a little ways back was that it sounds to me like you and your wife really had a very close relationship and that you were very happily married. I mean, just the way you speak about her and, you know, your grieving.
Oh, yeah.
and all that.
It's we did. We had a very, very neat relationship. We did a lot of stuff together. We had a lot of same interests. The only thing we weren't the same on was political parties. I was a Republican, a Democrat. And that got to be funny sometimes because I learned a long time ago, you don't fool with the Democrats. I mean, you don't, you know, do a trip on it. So we kind of avoided it in some ways, but every so often I'd make a mistake and say something stupid, and she'd take off on me about it. But other than that, we were very close, very, very close.
Yeah, no, it sounds like you had a wonderful marriage. And
oh, yeah.
What did you learn about working with the doctors throughout all of this?
Well, one of the things we learned, or I picked up on very quickly, and that is keep asking questions. If you don't understand something, ask the question, and then take a notebook when you're with the doctor and write it down, whatever is being said. The reason for that is sometimes it gets kind of technical. We had to give her shots. We had to do some intravenous stuff, and we had to learn all that stuff. And you have to pick up on it. I was the one that took care of the bypass bag for all that stuff. And you know, you learn a whole new jargon, your whole new vocabulary, so to speak.
I would imagine.
With the doctors, you know, and the doctors were neat. I mean, there was no question. Her cancer doctor was very, very compassionate, what have you. And you have to ask questions and then probe. Keep probing. If you don't quite understand what they're saying to you, keep asking, because if you don't, you'll be confused or just kind of, oh, my God, now what do I do?
Right, right. You know, we have a show on the last Tuesday of every month, which is specifically devoted to the subject of caregiver and physician conversations and the challenges that caregivers face speaking with medical professionals. And, you know, we're really trying to enhance that dialogue so that caregivers and their families really, you know, advocate for them, you know, for their loved ones, for the patients, and to really learn how to better communicate with doctors and vice versa. So I'm so glad that we're talking about this very subject.
Well, it's interesting, too, because as an example, when she was in the hospital recovering from the surgery, when she was back in the hospital with a staph infection, every morning the doctors would come in, you know, one of the duty doctors would come in and check, talk to her and so forth and so on. And without looking at the chart, they would always ask, did you have a bowel movement? And, well, she didn't have them because she had the bypass and it was going into a bag.
Right.
And I would say to the doctor nicely, I would say to him, would you please lift the covers? And she doesn't do that type of thing. And but you have to respect them and they have to respect you. And it happens. It happens. Most doctors are very, very capable of help telling you what's all going on, and sometimes even to the point it gets kind of brutal.
Yeah. No, I imagine that you must have went through such a massive learning curve with this disease and all of the organs that it affects. And yes, you know, we all studied biology at some point in our education, right? But, I mean, who remembers any of that?
Just remember where all the parts are.
Right, exactly. Now, what did you learn about cancer itself?
I think I said earlier something about the fact that especially pancreatic cancer, cancer itself is obviously can spread throughout the body, but the way it does it, at least in the abdominal cavity, it actually spits off cancer cells to other parts of portions of the abdominal cavity, and that starts a tumor there. So it
Right. Tumors
all over the place. And so the fact about stages of cancer. Stage one is basically curable almost, and no matter what it is, stage two is somewhat curable, stage three gets into the realm of, well, maybe, and stage four, generally terminal, and this is carries over with almost all the cancers. Luckily, most cancers can be detected on stage one or two and be taken care of, whereas
Right. Pancreatic
cancer, there's no way in God's green earth there's no symptoms.
Right. There are no symptoms, and it develops pretty rapidly. So your wife might have developed the cancer just a short time before she was diagnosed.
Well, that's a big $64 question. I've asked that, but the doctors don't have, and they really can't tell you that either.
Right.
Why a person? It's usually tied to they tie it to some sort of situation, like a person that smokes a lot or has all kinds of issues other than what you would think, and they contract pancreatic cancer. So they don't know. She didn't. Pardon me. She did not have any symptoms.
Now you talked a few times about how you spent a lot of the last 3 months of her life trying to make her comfortable. What exactly did you do?
Pardon me. We have a story house, and we moved her down to what's known as the grandma's room. Hold on 1 minute. Hold on. Pardon me.
No problem.
And we had a hospital bed. We made the room into a very comfortable living area. She had a big picture window. She could look out at the garden, out at the creek, and out at her favorite flowers. We were able to move her around in a wheelchair, take her outside, and again look at all her different flowers that she had. A lot of little things like she had a craving. She didn't eat much. She had a craving for chocolate ice cream. So she had nothing but chocolate ice cream. I mean, why not?
What do you mean, for breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Well, it's not going to, what difference does it make? If she
gained
50,000 pounds, what difference? But she wouldn't. She didn't lose, she kept losing weight, so.
Right.
But she was comfortable with that, and it made her smile. It made her eyes twinkle. She loved orange or fruit. And,
sure.
Things like that that she liked. We watched a lot of movies. She had sometimes hard for her to follow them, but she always was smiling, sitting there smiling. We knew darn well that she was enjoying them.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of talk. A lot of talk. Donna and I would talk, and she would just sit there and listen and interject something once in a while. But it was great. It was just, the way we treated it, the whole thing, was like there was nothing wrong.
Yeah. So you said earlier that you and your wife really never talked about death.
That's right.
So was it, do you think it was denial of death?
No. We both knew she was dying. We both knew she was going to die from it. We knew that from the day that they told her that she had pancreatic cancer and it was stage four.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew enough that we didn't know how long it would take. But we didn't. I think that was also part of trying to keep her comfortable. Marco was a very stoic individual in many respects, and she was very fastidious, and she had a lot of things like that she was all about. So there was no reason to talk about death. We had already set up wills. We already had trust things going. And also all that stuff automatically would kick in when she did die. And we already had talked about, had a gravesite already. It's kind of a funny story, too, but we did have one We knew cremation was going to be the, you know, all of the little things that you have to go through once the person passes away.
Right.
And so it was easy, and I knew what I was going to do. I knew how to do it. I'd already been through it with my parents and my two sisters dying, and so there's nothing secret about it all. But we didn't need to talk about it.
Right, because it had already been figured out.
Exactly.
You'd already had prepared for that.
Right.
Were there things that I guess, knowing her limited amount of time on this earth, that she wanted to do? Were there conversations about things that she wanted to do before she left?
That's a good question. And I don't know if it ever came up. I would bring things up to her, say, would you like to take a drive? She loved to go for drives, go over to the coast. We live very close to the Pacific Ocean.
And
to drive over there, and she loved to walk in the sand and what have you. Well, she couldn't do much walking anymore. It mainly was a wheelchair. And whatever walking she did, she really had to be held and supported. She didn't want to do that. She says, well, just push me out and let me look at my flowers. And then we did that type of thing. She and then, as I say, I have a whole stack of movies that over the years, especially comedies that I've kept. And so we would look at those, and she would giggle and laugh and so forth. So, but there was never enough to do. She wasn't healthy enough to do a lot of stuff.
Right. But it also sounds from my perspective, listening to you, sounds that there was some level of peace there in those last 3 months, and that it didn't seem like she had many regrets.
Well, that's right. And so there wasn't any denial. It was the acceptance of the inevitable. And
yeah.
We both were there. I mean, we didn't like it. You still, as I said earlier, you still have that word hope.
Of course, sure.
It's an acceptance. So how can you best keep the quality of life, so to speak, and quality of living, what living was left, on such a level that the person that is going to die is, and the person, the caregiver is going to be able to accept it. You kind of fall into a routine,
mm-hmm.
and it works.
You know, Dietrich, thank you so much for sharing what is such a tragic event in your wife's life and in your family and yours. But out of it came something so beautiful, which is your story and the assistance that you'll provide so many families who are going through this with their own family members. I want to reiterate the name of the website. It's 3monthsbook.com. And the name of Dietrich's book is, Dietrich, if you'll do me the pleasure.
Go ahead.
Three months, A Caregiving Journey from Heartbreak to Hope. And a lot of what we've discussed here, you'll read about in Dietrich's book in much more depth, and a lot of great advice for it doesn't matter. I mean, yes, Dietrich is, telling us a story from his perspective as a husband and as a male. And, it's not so often that we hear from the male perspective. So, Dietrich, thank you so much for sharing your very intimate story and the generosity of your spirit to share this very tragic experience with all of us. And thank you. We'd love to have you back.
Well, you're certainly welcome. It's good talking with you, and hopefully someone will pick up on the book and take a look at it, read it. It doesn't take long to read it. It's about 3 hours, 4 hours.
Well, I'd like to thank our audience very much for tuning in. I hope you took away a lot from this conversation. Again, Dietrich's book can be found at 3monthsbook.com. Please join us next Tuesday, March 13th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, when our Director of Events, Polly Whitehorn, will interview Kathy Kress, who is the author of Mom Loves You Best, Forgiving and Forging Sibling Relationships. A different perspective on the issue of caregiving as it relates to siblings, our brothers and sisters. and how that can affect the caregiving process. She also wrote the book, Handbook of Geriatric Care Management on the Aging Family. So tune in next week. Dietrich, thank you again.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.